The issue of sex trafficking is a world, national, and local problem. St. Louis certainly no exception and ranks very high on the list of sex trafficking cities. In May, President Obama signed an anti-sex trafficking law, which Missouri Congresswoman Ann Wagner helped sponsor.
If you are prosecuted for human trafficking, you will be fined. They will seize your assets, and those monies will go towards the victims' funds and some of the safe houses that we've also seen in Missouri and in St. Louis popping up, whether they're Magdalene House, the Covering House, Crisis International. I've been involved with all of them, and they're just they do a fantastic work, and we need more of those beds. There, frankly, are more safe havens for animals in our country than there are for young girls and minors and women who are sold into human trafficking.
Representative Wagner mentioned Magdalene, St. Louis. It's just opened Magdalene House, a residential facility to provide safe haven for victims. Joining me in studio are Tricia Rowland Hamilton, Executive Director of Magdalene, St. Louis. Katie Rhodes is a sex trafficking survivor who will be leading group sessions with women of Magdalene House. I thank you both so much for being with us. I have a definition here I'm going to read. Make sure that we're all on the same page with this and everyone understands it. Sex trafficking is something in which commercial sex acts are induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or in which the person induced to perform such acts has not attained 18 years of age. Is that an acceptable definition? A good definition? Okay. Tricia, let me start with you and get some sense of the problem here in the St. Louis area.
We've been studying this issue in St. Louis and elsewhere for years. I started becoming involved in this movement almost 4 years ago. And through informal conversations with police officers, survivors, and those who are still working the street, I've come to learn that it's a much larger problem than we tend to see. We don't see a lot in the way of street prostitution in our city. We often see it in hotel rooms, motel rooms, online. And so there are certain areas in the city where you might see street prostitution, but it's more likely that someone's being sold, bought and sold online through hotels at truck stops.
Representative Wagner's bill, well, it's not her bill, but she has part of it. She has a segment of it in which an amendment in which the online trafficking, the advertising of this sort of thing really gets a lot of attention. Your thoughts, Katie, on that part of it?
Well, I think definitely anything that gets a profit from the sale of women and girls needs to be held accountable. I know that it's probably running into some constitutional critiques. However, I think that if you're making a profit, that's contributing to the sale of women. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely important to be able to hold those companies accountable as well.
Mm-hmm. Give me some sense, without a full detail, of your story.
I was trafficked. I was trafficked as an adult. I was about 18 years old, and I was living on the streets, working at a strip club, actually, because I thought that I could make some money pretty quickly and get out of that lifestyle. And that didn't happen. I was approached by a pimp and forced into prostitution. So that, for me, looked like a very stereotypical pimp-based structure. For myself, I was sold online. Mostly, and then through strip clubs. So I was not somebody who walked on the streets. And when I got out, it took many years of rehab and therapy and really focusing on healing after that.
And it took, as you say, a long time.
Yes, I've been out about 13 years now.
Yeah. Tricia, typical story?
Very typical story. 3 weeks ago today, we accepted our first three residents into the Magdalene St. Louis House. We are welcoming our sixth resident today, and this is a very common story. There's no 8-year-old that I know that grows up saying, I want to be a prostitute. So when you look at it in that context, and you look at things like Backpage.com that do nothing but promote the objectification of women, girls, and to a lesser extent, boys and young men, and it's something that we have to end.
8-year-old? You say no 8-year-old wants to be a prostitute. You're not dealing
with... Do you know an 8-year-old that wants to grow up to be a prostitute?
No, I don't, but I'm asking if you're dealing with 8-year-olds.
I'm not dealing with 8-year-olds, but certainly some of our women were first sexually exploited at a young age.
What the folks who will be staying with you at Magdalen House, St. Louis, what exactly is going to be available for them there?
Something that's not available to them anywhere else in our community, at least adult women. We have a sister organization called the Covering House in Jefferson County working with younger girls, 13 to 17, who are victims of sex trafficking. So what we offer is 2 years of housing, food, medical care, dental care, mental health therapy. We do education programs, job training. The women... A typical day in their lives right now as we're trying to get settled in is they go to intensive outpatient programming throughout the day. We then do group sessions in the afternoon at the house. And in the evenings, women are typically going to AA or NA meetings. Mm. Weekends are a little less structured to give them a little time just to rest. So we also do a lot of life skills training. Many of these women, if they entered into this life at a very early age, don't know how to balance a checkbook, don't know how to cook a meal. Very simple things that we all take for granted are things that we're instructing them on.
Is there a profile, I mean, is there that you could give me or about a typical sex trafficking victim?
What I've learned, and this is not really based on the women that we have at our house right now, but what I've learned in our community and elsewhere throughout the country is that these women were first sexually exploited between the ages of 7 and 11. They then turned to drugs and alcohol to hide that pain, to deal with that pain, and enter into the life between the ages of 13 and 15. That's on average. So our women are all very unique. And have very unique stories. And so it's hard to say any one is more typical than another.
Right. Katie, what is your approach as a counselor? Obviously, your experience will carry a great deal of weight, needless to say. But what will your approach be and has your approach been in talking with other victims?
You know, I think it part of it depends on how I'm going into it. So if I'm going in as a therapist, I handle that a little bit differently than if I'm going in as a peer specialist or a peer counselor. I'm doing peer support groups for Magdalen St. Louis. Now, because I have the therapeutic background, it probably looks even a little different from normal peer support groups. But the main approach that I take in is radical respect. These women have their own stories. They have their own journeys. There are some themes across the board. But what they haven't gotten before and what I think they deserve now is really that radical respect to be where they're at right now in the moment. And so the language that they use to describe themselves or to describe their experiences is where we start with. And what I've done so far is really focusing on how we show that respect for each other within the group also. So women, you know, they might have an idea. I was just a prostitute. That's it. I don't, you know, I wasn't sex trafficked, whatever their kind of ideology is at the moment. And then we might have women who they've been sexually abused their whole life, and that's how they carry that, as they see themselves as victims of sex trafficking. But really focusing with them on hearing each other and showing that respect with each other so that they can start hearing the similarities and not the differences.
So that is part of it. Their interaction with each other is part of the therapy.
Absolutely.
Define radical respect for me. Again, I know what the words mean, but I'm not – in this context, I'm not sure.
Well, this idea that there's no judgment, that – there's no one way or right way to live our lives. There are things that we all can see as healthier or generalize it as healthier. But if, you know, women come out not knowing those skills, how are they supposed to know them? And so it's really meeting them where they're at and authentically listening to their stories and hearing the words that they're saying. And hearing kind of the spirit of what they're saying, too, versus the words alone. So I guess really like empathetic listening is what I mean, too, by radical respect.
Yeah. Tricia, what about this legislation signed May 29th by President Obama? We've alluded to it a couple of times. What do you think of it? Does it go far enough? Is it going to really help deal with this issue?
I don't know that it'll go far enough, but I think it's going to be helpful. I think that providing law enforcement better tools to attack this problem is going to be very helpful. It's something that I talk about all the time when I'm speaking with people, is that we treat these girls and women like they are criminals, when in fact they are victims. There's something magical that happens between that age of 17 and 18 that turns a young girl from a victim into a criminal. And so our response in our community is to continuously lock them up. We have women who have, on average, have 100 arrests on their records. They have felony convictions, mostly related to drugs, because they might be caring for somebody else. And so what I say is, does that really work? Is it working here? Is it working anywhere else? Why aren't the purchasers suffering any consequences? These are questions that I raise over and over and over again, and I plan to continue to raise them until we start addressing this problem in a different way.
I'd like to open the phone lines. People would like to get into this conversation. They can do so by calling us at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, or we'll take a tweet at STL on air. Katie, women are treated differently than men when it comes to the whole sex subject, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you want to just elaborate on that for a moment, and how you deal with that and your sessions with victims?
Well, it can go any way from the criminal justice system, who doesn't actually penalize men who purchase sex, but it penalizes the women who sell sex, to the way that women are treated because they have multiple partners, sexual partners. I mean, it can go from one end to the other. Women still are seen as kind of commodities, and we still have this, you know, virgin and Madonna idea about sexuality with women. And I think that that plays into a huge role. Even talking about the women as victims a lot of times plays into that role too. You know, we need people to come in and swoop them up and, you know, rescue them, this kind of rescue language and rescue mentality. The big part is that men are in control positions as well, law enforcement, attorneys, even some legislators, even some service providers are ran by men. And so that power dynamic could still work out in providing services for the women as well. So it's a touchy subject. Part of it is eliminating the shame for the women around that. And I think that that takes many, many years to undo that shame.
How did you overcome that?
You know, sometimes I don't think I have all the way. You know, as far as the shame regarding my experience with trafficking, I've come a long way. I don't necessarily carry that shame anymore. In my everyday life, I continue to fight for injustices against women across the board. That's kind of how I deal with it. But then also figuring out who I am, figuring out what is and isn't okay with myself, and really living by that code versus what society tells me that I should be doing.
Is this something that you've dealt with pretty much on your own, or have you had therapeutic sessions yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Don't trust a therapist that doesn't have a therapist, is my saying. You know, and I've done a lot of work over the years, intensive work early on, and then I've been involved with 12-step recovery groups as well, and that's been something that's been consistent throughout. And then in the last few years, I've really focused on doing the in-depth trauma work so that I can be of service to women. It's difficult being a complex trauma survivor helping other complex trauma survivors. So to take care of myself is definitely very important.
Tricia, and I'll come back to you, Katie, on this too. What this reminds me of is PTSD. I mean, I see it in many ways similar to people coming back from a traumatic situation overseas and having to deal with the fallout.
It's been studied nationally, and they certainly are compared to those who are returning from service. The level of violence and trauma that these women endure, especially depending on how many years they've been in the life, is very significant, and it's something that takes a long time to process, if they even have the tools to process it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to provide.
Yeah. Am I correct there? I mean, I don't think I'm very far off. Apparently, I'm not with regard to your experience in PTSD.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the varying degree of the effect of PTSD on the women, it presents differently in different women. However, I think it's pretty much there. The trauma impact is there for most individuals who's been through this level of trauma.
Tricia, a lot of people, I believe, have always thought of sex trafficking as being more international than local, that it involves third world women from third world countries, from Asia, from Eastern Europe, and that sort of thing. And yet, here we are in St. Louis, the top 20 cities in the country for this.
It's a significant problem in a lot of cities, and it's happening in our own backyards. We're just choosing not to see it. It might be hidden. It might be hidden in hotels, but it's there. And the more people that we can educate about the problem here in St. Louis and elsewhere, I think the better off we're going to be down the road in terms of how we address it. A lot of people, I would venture to say that all of us know someone who's buying sex. All of us know someone who's buying sex. They could be a neighbor. They could be, you know, somebody that you go to church with. They could be someone that you know through someone else. It's really hard to predict who those buyers are. But I would venture to say that each one of us knows a person who's buying sex.
Katie?
Absolutely. I think that we spend a lot of times talking about the effect of this industry on the women, which we need to talk about. But it's like we have the elephant in the room of the men who purchase sex. Right. And no one wants to believe that somebody they know has purchased sex or that someone they know has purchased sex either willingly or accidentally of a minor. Because men who purchase sex don't know a lot of times if these women are actually under the age of 18 or not. And we don't want to confront that fact. And that's what makes this issue very difficult to have a long-lasting solution.
How do we educate?
We just got to take the blinders off. Yeah. is really, we need to start being willing to be uncomfortable and being uncomfortable with the reality of the prostitution yeah. of the industry.
We also need to start educating in an earlier age, mm-hmm. Especially as young girls are reaching teenagerhood. And likely to become a little bit more vulnerable to a pimp who might want to, you know, recruit them. Of course, they don't say that's what they're going to do when they're recruiting them. It's, oh, I got a job for you, or you look like a model. Let me help you out with that. So education earlier on in a child's life is going to be helpful.
And just to add real quickly onto that, education of boys. Mm-hmm. So there's a great kind of saying that goes around and that's basically, instead of teaching women how not to be raped or how not to be exploited, we need to teach men how not to rape and not exploit.
But, you know, in our society today, and I'm not defending this by any stretch of the imagination, there's a certain amount of glamour to sex. I mean, we sell sex when we're selling cornflakes, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. That's part of the education process as well. I suppose media attention to it in that regard. Look at our sitcoms. Look at mm-hmm. what we're watching on television.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it's totally about how much sex is out there. It's about this weird dynamic of being fascinated with sex, but yet still coming from this old school shame-based embarrassment of sex. I think it's that dichotomy that creates this, not necessarily sex.
And complicated by the fact, Tricia, that a lot of people do feel uncomfortable just talking about it. It's not
these
something
are hard conversations to have. Yeah. But you know, we're more than about just opening a house for 11 women. We're about trying to change a culture that says it's okay to buy and sell women. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, well, it's great what you're doing, but 11 women is, from what I gather, is just a drop in the bucket given what's mm-hmm. going on in our community.
We have 25 women on a wait list.
Yeah.
And we haven't even, you know, explored the depth of the folks who need this kind of service. So, I mean, this is just word of mouth. that these women are finding out about us. And so we have a wait list already.
If people do want to learn more about what you're doing and about how to become involved with what you're doing, what should they do?
They can go to our website, which is www.magdalenestl.org.
And everything that they need to know about what you're doing is,
yes,
is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a final thought you'd like to leave us with? Katie, I'll turn to you. What message do you want the takeaway to be to people who are listening to this program right now who may be in the position you were in 13 years and more ago?
I think the main message is that there is help, and there is hope of getting out. It's a long road. It's a long, hard road. But all it takes is that first step to be able to move forward.
Patricia, final thought from you?
I would echo what Katie said. We believe strongly that love heals, and that's our motto. And there are people here who will love you no matter what you've done in your life.
We'll put a link to your website on our website at stlpublicradio.org and hope the folks take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. Katie Rhodes and Tricia, thank you so much for being with us. It's great seeing you. Tricia Rowland Hamilton, our guest, along with Katie Rhodes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That does it for us for today. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Peter Stark about his account of the quest to establish a Jamestown-like colony on the Pacific coast in the 19th century. We'll also hear the next installment of the We Live Here podcast addressing the question of, is segregation in St. Louis killing us? Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.